Good afternoon. Welcome to those who are here as we webcast, as well as those tuned in online. We appreciate you joining us today. Both of our messages, I think, are going to tie together very well, the sermonette and the sermon. Something that has been on our minds, obviously, thankfulness, coming through a week of Thanksgiving, and hopefully you were able to enjoy time together as family. In California, they limited the number of people that could be together, and for many of us this year, it was a little bit different, not having a lot of people at Thanksgiving, but still enjoyable nonetheless. And of course, it's not a day of how much can we get from it, how much can we eat, how much can we take in, but as a day to show gratitude, the way that it was established for this country by our presidents years and years ago. I want to start off today by reading a Bible verse blog, and this came in actually this past week, and I had already had this sermon I had been working on for some time, and it tied in very, very well. So I want to start off today by reading this particular Bible verse blog. In everything, give thanks. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 18. In everything, give thanks, for this is the will of God in Jesus Christ for you. On the Daily Bible Verse blog, the next few days are going to look at the importance of Thanksgiving. Of course, this was earlier in the week. Thankfulness is a hallmark of a true Christian. Almost anyone can be thankful when everything is going well, but Christians are also to be growing in an attitude of thanksgiving in every situation. This takes us to a spiritual perspective, the ability to see things more as God sees them. Though not everything happens, or everything that happens is something that we're thankful for, but as a Christian, we're learning to see beyond the present suffering, to thank God for his eternal goodness and the result of his great purpose and plan, which allows us to give thanks for everything. When we truly believe that all things work together for the good and that it is a testing of our faith that produces patience and to make us perfect and complete, then we can count it all joy and give thanks even when we face various trials. An Old Testament example of this was Job when he lost his money, his children, and his health. He blessed the name of God in spite of the personal tragedies, not because of them. Nothing speaks more powerfully than a walk with God and continual thankfulness. Why is it God's will that we give thanks? Because it helps us to become more like God and to develop his perspective and his character. Ingratitude and covetousness are the antithesis of God's nature. Thankfulness grows out of a godly mindset. In thinking about blessings, and I'm sure many of us have over the past week, thinking of those particular blessings that we have, I want to turn to a verse, and it's one of my favorite passages. I just shared this with someone recently. Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. Romans 8, 28. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. And that's why I said this blog was perfect. It tied in well because that was part of what it covered in this particular verse on thankfulness. And I want to look at this verse and break it down because it says, we know. It says, and we know. Do you know? Do you know that all things work together for good? The word means, when it says, do you know, means we see, we are well aware, we understand, and we are sure. So it says, we are sure that all things work together for good. There's a mindset there that realizes when God says something and God works you through something or teaches you something, that it is sure. Are you confident that even though you're going through something difficult, that it's going to work out for good? That's what he's saying here in Romans. We know that all things work together for good. It's a great feeling to have. To completely trust in God and not to worry. Not to wonder, is it going to work out? How is this going to work out? I don't see it. Sometimes we don't. But you can know and be assured that it will work together for good. God is there. He is the one working it out. And this is part of the faith and the trust that God will do what he says he will. And in scripture, it was recorded for us. And here, Paul was saying in Romans, we know that it does work together for good. God is guiding things. We simply have to trust. So does Paul mean when he says, oh, we know that all things work together for good, did he really mean all things, or was he saying most things? People look at this and they say, well, you know, most things do work together for good, but there's a lot happened in my life that I don't see the good that came from it. Now, it doesn't say you will see all the good things and you will learn from every single thing you go through, but it does say it would all work out for the good. Strong's Exhaustive Concordance says of these words, all things, it means all, any, every, the whole. It means thoroughly and whatsoever. So it's talking about everything you go through. So when Paul says, we know that all things work together for good, he says it is everything you go through. As a Christian, will work together for good. So it means everything, everything that we go through. And for some, they look at that and say, well, that doesn't seem possible. I've been through some terrible things, but God says with him, all things are possible. Barnes' note says of this passage, all things, all of our afflictions and our trials, our persecutions, our calamities to which we are exposed, though they may be numerous, long continued, yet they are among the means that they are appointed for our welfare. He said it will happen for good. So all things, it says, work together for good. I've had people tell me, well, this isn't true. I've gone through some horrible things. I've gone through things that there was nothing good in it. That's not what this says. It doesn't say you won't have difficulties, or you won't have trials, or you won't have sickness, or that you won't have affliction. You're going to go through those things. But it says it will work together for good. When we go through trials and adversities, it will work together for good. The word good means for our benefit or for our welfare. It works together for our benefit. That means it's something that's going to happen future down the line. And a lot of times when we go through trials, we're not rejoicing and saying it. I am so excited. I just got another trial and I'm looking forward to this one to see what I can learn from it. No, we don't rejoice while the trial's going on. Most of us are, oh no, not another trial. No, not another thing that had coming down on my life right now at this time. But it works, it means for our benefit, for their well-being. And it means working together, and that word, words working together means they simply, it adds to or is a co-laborer. So the trials we go through adds to or is a co-laborer for what's going to work for the future, in what we're going to produce. And he said that will produce good. In what way do trials and difficulties produce good? Well, first, it teaches us lessons. When we go through trials and adversities, it teaches us lessons. There are things in my life that were very difficult. They were trying times, times of affliction, times of persecution. And of course, you know, while you're going through them, you're not rejoicing saying, this is great, God's working with me and I'm having all of these tests and trials. And some of them were very, very difficult times in life. But after going through them, I do not regret having those adversities or those trials, because there were things learned from them. Many people even ask God to help them see what they need to learn from a trial or adversity. And again, that is a wise thing to do. 1 Peter 1 verse 3 tells us, blessed be God, our Father of the Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible, undefiled, and it does not fade away, and it's reserved in heaven for you. This is hopefully speaking of you and I. When we read these, we realize that there is an inheritance. There's something that God has promised, and it's something that's future. But it is something that God is speaking of you and I about. And it says, who are kept by the power of God through faith for salvation, ready to be revealed at this time. As the first message was bringing out, the things that we have to really count and say, what is most important and what do I have to be thankful for? He says, in this you greatly rejoice, Though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. So you're going through trials, but look at all these things that you have to be grateful for. And look at how the trial you're going to is going to, or going through, is going to work toward providing something that is good. So we can focus on the future and realize that the trials we're going through now, as Paul says, in no way can compare to what God has prepared for us. Go to James chapter 1. James chapter 1 and verse 2. James chapter 1 and in verse 2. He says, my brethren, count it all joy when you enter into various trials. And again, at what point do we count it joy? The English Standard Version says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. The modern King James says, my brothers, count it all joy when you fall into different kinds of temptations. In the original, it is written as temptations. And it's interesting that that definition of temptations, as we read it, from Strong's Exhaustive Concordance says, putting to proof through discipline and adversity. So he says, count it all joy when you enter into various tests, various proofs, various disciplines or adversities that you run into, because they're there for a reason and they will help us. The root word comes from a word that means to test, to prove, or to examine. So count it all joy when you're being tested, proved, and examined. That should be exciting because you go, okay, God is working with me. But at the same time, we ask that question, what can I learn from this? Is there something I need to gain or something that's going to help me in the future? And when you do that, you begin to have a better understanding and a better wisdom of what you're going to gain. So it says, count it all joy when you are tested, when you're being proven or you're going through a various trial in what you're going through. So why do we count it joy? Because we know that it is going to work together for the good, is what Paul says in Romans. Okay, verse 3, it says, knowing that this testing of your faith produces patience. So God says, we need to rejoice that we're going through trials because we know if we gain what we're supposed to from that particular trial, you are going to gain patience. But let patience have its perfect work that you can become perfect. And that word means complete, perfect and complete, lacking nothing. He says, you will have what you need as you gain from these various trials. If you are still lacking, if you're lacking in understanding of what you were supposed to learn, if you are lacking in lessons, and saying, what lesson was I supposed to learn because I didn't gain anything from this? If you're lacking, he said, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who then gives liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to you. But let him ask in faith, not doubting. He says, if you ask me to give you the wisdom and the understanding of what this trial and adversity is, don't ask doubting, going, I don't think God's going to tell me, but I'm going to ask him anyway. No, it said, let him ask in faith and not doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave that's driven in the sea and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from God. If you ask God to show you, you better expect God's going to show you. It's like talking to individuals and counseling with them for baptism. I say, ask God to show you what you need to repent of. But ask him to show it in mercy, because he will show you what you need to repent of. And you start to see yourself and you start to be, gain a better understanding of yourself. And over time, that wisdom grows into, I'm not exactly who I thought I was. So if we're lacking, we ask for help. So God says it will work together for good, but not if you're doubting and you don't believe. So there are things that tie in. It's not just a matter of, you're going to learn and you're going to gain from everything and you're going to rejoice in every trial. There are things that we have to be doing. So we can't be doubting and we can't be unbelieving. Let's go back to Romans chapter 8 again. And we'll finish going through this particular verse in Romans chapter 8, verse 28. Romans 8, verse 28. We know that all things work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. So God says all things work together, and it doesn't say for everybody, no matter what consequences. It says all things work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. So it will work together for good, but he says you have to love God. And it's not a matter of just going, well then, I love God. Well, no, there's more to it than that. John chapter 14 and verse 12. John chapter 14 and in verse 12. He said, most assuredly, I'm reading from the New King James, most assuredly, I say to you, he who believes in me and the works that I do, he will do also, and greater works than these he will do, because I go to my Father. And whatever you ask in my name, that I will do. He says, I will answer your prayer, that or so that my Father may be glorified in the Son. If you ask anything in my name, I will do it. And he says, if you love me, keep my commandments. Keep my commandments. So when we see this phrase that all things work together for the good for those who love God, it's somebody who's being obedient to God, somebody who is committed to God, somebody who is in that deep relationship and are keeping the commandments. Why does the world miss the relationship with God, and why does the world not receive all of these blessings? Because the world has done away with God's commandments. They say we don't have to keep the commandments. The Ten Commandments are done away with. They're old. Yet God says, if you love me, you're going to keep my commandments. All right, 1 John chapter 5. 1 John 5 and verse 1. 1 John 5 and verse 1. Whoever believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and everyone who loves him who begot also loves him who is begotten of him. He says, if you love God, and if you love Jesus Christ, you'll love those who are begotten of him. So if you love God and Jesus Christ, you're also going to love those that are called and those who God is working with. There will be a love for the brethren. So when God says all things are going to work together for those who love God, it means those who love God, as we read earlier, having God's perspective, God's mind, which is a love for Jesus Christ, a love for the brethren, a love for the family of God and what God is doing. But yet, people do away with those commandments. So in verse 2, it says, by this we know that we love the children of God, and we love God, and keep his commandments. It's tied together. There's not a separation of a love for God and, well, I'm not going to keep the commandments, so those are done away. He said, this is the love of God, verse 3, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. The love of God and the keeping of the commandments are synonymous. They go together. So there are stipulations, provisions, requirements for all things to work together for good to those who love God. That means we love God, we love the brethren, we keep the commandments. And you can't live a life of your own, doing your own thing and saying, well, I love God, but there, you know, I've got things I want to do on my own, and think that everything's going to work together for the good. God says there are stipulations. But what a blessing to know without a doubt, as Paul says, we know, we have proof that God will always be there no matter what you're going through, and it will work together for good. When you know the end result is good, when you know you're going through a trial or difficulty and you know that God is going to bless you and you're going to come out gaining something from it, your approach is different. Changes your attitude, as we heard in the first message. How is it that we can rejoice and know without a doubt that what's going to work together for good when so many are going through difficult times of suffering? Well, we can't read things into Scripture that aren't there. Some say, well, if you're righteous and love God, you should never have trials and difficulties, that you should never get sick. John 16:33 says, these things I've spoken to you, that in me you have peace. In the world you're going to have tribulation. Be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. The word tribulation means trials, tribulations, burdens. He said, you're in the world, you are going to have those. He doesn't say, when you're a Christian, I protect you from all of that. He does take us under his wing. He does lead us. He does guide us. But he says, I'm not going to just remove all those things from you. You can learn from them, and they will work together for good. So he said that these things would happen to us. The afflictions, the trials, the burdens. John 15, verse 18 says, if the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. If you feel like you're cut off and people are persecuting you because of beliefs or because maybe it's your employer that's giving you a hard time because of your beliefs. He said, if you're of the world would love its own. If you did everything the way they wanted, they would love it and have a relationship with you. Yet because you are not of the world, I have chosen you out of the world. Therefore, the world hates you. That tells you you're going to be persecuted. So God didn't call us to fit in, and he didn't call us because he said, I'm going to call you and I'm going to make it easy. But we do have Christ as our mediator, and we have a helper that guides us through and does work everything towards good. When we learn from it, when we ask, and when we gain that wisdom from each trial and difficulty that we go through. In the remainder of the message, I'm going to focus not so much on the blessing of knowing that it's going to work together for the good. Now that we should know. We have that relationship with God, and we've seen that already. I want to focus on our approach to trials, our approach to difficulties, and the things that we do have to go through, and look at our attitude and what our attitude is towards each difficulty or each affliction as it comes our way. Has a lot to do with first verse we went through. This particular verse I want to go to now, and I do want to take the time to explore this particular verse as well, and it does tie in very well. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. Now, we saw earlier the word temptation was talking about trials, tests, and adversities. No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above that which you're able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. I want to read the English Standard Version. That was New King James. The English Standard Version says, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you to be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to endure it. This is another scripture that gives us hope when we are going through difficulty. Another scripture that we turn to and we realize, okay, not only is it going to work together for good, but God is not going to allow us to go through a trial or difficulty that we can't endure, that we can't make it through. So he gives us hope. But do we truly understand what this verse is saying? Because often this particular passage is also misunderstood. I want to go through this verse piece by piece, because there's much to learn from this particular verse. Just as we did with the other verse, I want to look at it from a different perspective, look at it from different descriptions, because it gives us a better understanding, and that's what we're looking for. God says, did you gain wisdom from it? Did you gain patience? Most translations use this word temptation, and usually when we think of temptation, we think of something that is going to lure us. Chocolate. Some people say, well, chocolate definitely lures me because that's something I want, or steak. Second piece of cheesecake. Boston cream pie, something, whatever your favorite thing is. For some, if we just came through Thanksgiving, a pecan pie or a pumpkin pie, maybe buying shoes or a particular dress, and you were lured by something you saw. sometimes it's frustrating going shopping because I look at things and I go through and I'm like, oh, that's one I like the best. Out of all these I've seen, oh, that's the most expensive one. That takes away my lure because I'm economically and financially minded. And I'm like, no, that's not worth that. But it is something that lures you. Oh, that's nice. Well, some people are lured when they think of that. So when you think of temptation, people think of being lured into something. I want to look at this word from Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. It's pirasmos, or pronounced pirasmos. It means a putting to proof, experience, adversity. The root word comes from a word that means to test, an endeavor, to scrutinize, to entice, to discipline, to examine, to prove, or to try. So it can be worded where it says, there's no temptation has overtaken you. There's no trial that has overtaken you. There's no discipline or examination that has come upon you. And we realize there's no trial or something that has come upon us. There's no proving. There's no adversity that has come upon you. There's no examination that has come upon you. Or you could say there's no putting to the test that has come upon you, but such as is common to man. Some look at this, and of course, we all think, well, my trial is different than what anybody else has ever had to go through. Nobody's ever had to suffer the trial and adversity that I'm experiencing. Well, Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun. Different trials, different adversities, and different things will affect people in different ways. Each trial and adversity may appear different. But that's not necessarily the case in what we're seeing here. Clark commentary states, common to man, it says that is small, short, or moderate. Now, we can look at this and say, well, it's just common. That's a normal thing that people go through. People who have contracted COVID this year, it's not a normal thing that people go through. It's not common. Yeah, now they're saying it's becoming more common, but it's not something common that you go through. And those who have been suffered through that realize this is a trial and it's an affliction of our health. But he says, it is small, it is short, it is moderate. Your temptation or trial might have been easily resisted or overcome. Besides, God will not suffer you to be tried above the strength that he gives you. But with the trials, he will provide you with sufficient strength to resist it. And as the trial comes in, he will make your way out of it. When I say people misunderstand that passage, that God will provide a way of escape, the misunderstanding is often getting out of the trial. People say, well, God will provide a way of escape, so God's going to take me out of the trial so I don't have to experience it. Is getting out of the trial our goal? Looking at Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, he says, or such as a man can bear. And again, that can be puzzling to some or confusing. But when we read verse 13, it says, no temptation has taken you except it is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above what you are able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you're able to bear it. So we break this down. It says God is faithful. Just as Paul said in Romans 8:28, we know, well, God is also faithful. He's trustworthy. He's believable. And he says, if we believe, and we can believe, he says, we're not going to be allowed to be tested, tried, examined, or proved beyond what we're able to bear. Now, have you ever had a trial or difficulty that you thought, I can't take anymore? But then you had to go through more. I've been in particular trials, and I mentioned some adverse trials in my life, and I was young and I made a stupid mistake of saying, well, it can't get any worse. And it got worse. And I'm like, well, now it can't get any worse. And it got worse. And then I started thinking about gratefulness and gratitude and what do I have that I need to start appreciating and using instead of going, well, this can't get any worse. It's the worst thing that can happen to me. And it wasn't. There were so many blessings, and as I begin to focus on the right things, it turned around and I learned lessons. But we can't think, well, no, it's going to be different. God's going to take me out of this trial. So God is faithful. He says we can believe that he's not going to try us or allow us to be tried more than we can bear. And again, sometimes in our own minds, God doesn't say, well, I'm not going to allow you to be tried above what you think you can bear. I've talked to people and they go, I can't bear very much. I can't bear trials. I can't bear adversity. I only try me just a little bit because I can't take very much. God knows differently, and sometimes we set a very low threshold of what we think we can endure. People say, I have a very low pain tolerance. I can't handle pain. And then they've been in some very precarious situations or in a lot of pain, and they realize, okay, I made it through. I survived. It's not what we think. It is what God says he knows. God knows what we're like. Now let's look at the next part. He says, above which you are able, or of what you can endure, or of what you are able to handle, or of what you are able to make it through. So God says, I'm not going to allow you to be tested or tried above what you're able to make it through. So let's read again what we have so far in verse 13. He says, no trial, no adversity, no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to man, meaning it's going to be short-lived, it's not going to be forever, but people go through these things. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tried, tempted, tested beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. It's an important little word that we see here joining this last sentence. It is a connecting phrase. He says he's not going to allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able. But as Paul's writings, he uses sometimes single words to show that he's explaining something. In some phrases, he'll say, nevertheless, and then he'll go on because he's saying, I'm telling you something, but nevertheless, this is what the end result is. Or he writes, knowing this, or he'll write, therefore. This particular word, but, means contrarywise or inversely. So God says he's not going to allow you to be tested above what you're able to work through, able to go through. Contrarywise or nevertheless. So no trial or adversity, no test is overtaking you, but God is going to nevertheless, with that trial, with the test or trial, make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. We like to hear those words, a way of escape. Get me out of the trial. Take me out of this adversity. Just remove the suffering I'm going through. But is that what it means? Have you ever prayed that God would take the trial away? Please take this trial away from me. It's more than I can bear. Please take me out of this trial. I have. I've made that mistake. Learned from it. Learned that there's something that I should be taking, not just praying that God takes me out of a trial. I've also asked God to make that way of escape, thinking that the way of escape would mean it's instantly over. And so I prayed, well, please provide a way of escape, thinking in this trial. It did, in its time, after I learned and after I grew in patience. Is that what Paul meant? Jameson Fawcett Brown says he provides a way of escape. The Greek is a way, or the way of escape, the appropriate way of escape in each particular temptation, not an immediate escape, but one in due time after patience has had her perfect work. God does provide you a way of escape as you learn your lesson and you go through it, and he helps you endure the trial. James chapter 1 and verse 2 says, my brethren, count it all joy when you enter into these various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith, he's talking about trials, the testing of your faith, the testing of your trials, the testing of your character will produce patience, but let patience have its perfect work. This word escape comes from the Greek to go out or to exit or to end. He will provide an exit. He will provide an end. But it's not, he just stops you having a trial and things are back to being good and you're blessed all the time. There's no trials and adversities. God will bring it to an end when it is appropriate, and he will make a way to the end so that you may be able to bear it. You may have been like me many years ago and thought, well, if I'm going through a trial adversity, it should be taken away and I won't have to endure it. But that's not what is said here. Jameson Fawcett Brown says, a way to bear it, in the Greek, a way to bear it or bear up under it, a way against it. And Jameson Fawcett Brown says, not that he will take it away. Yet why do so many look at this and say, well, God's going to provide a way out of it. He's going to remove me from having to even going through a particular trial. He said, I will provide you a way to bear up under it. I will give you the strength, the energy, the confidence, and the things that you need to bear up under this particular trial or adversity. We'll look at an example of this in Paul's own life. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 7. Paul says, I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations. A thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. The word buffet in the Greek means to chastise or to rap with the fist. I think of Marty McFly, you know, when you thump somebody on the head. Hello, McFly. A rapping with the fist. Barnes says the words to buffet me means to smite with the hand or to maltreat in any way. The meaning is that the effect or the design of this would deeply afflict him. So he says there's a thorn in the flesh that I think is there to deeply afflict me and to bring things into perspective. Verse 8, he says, concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me, saying, I have an affliction. Can you just remove the affliction? He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, here's another one of Paul's words. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distress, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. He said, when I'm humbled, when I realize not everything's just perfect and coming up roses, when I'm going through trials and adversities, he said, I realize for Christ's sake, I'm weak. But that makes me stronger because now I'm depending on Christ. I'm depending on God. I realize I don't have everything necessary of my own. But he realized that God was always there and that God knows best. And he says, therefore, I take pleasure in those things. He didn't say, I take pleasure in this thorn in my side. And there's all kinds of discussions and studies about what that thorn in his side was. It doesn't really explain it to us or tell us exactly what it was. But he said, I take pleasure in it because I've learned from it. He also knew that he learned from all the trials and tests and adversities that all of us go through. When we ask God for a way of escape, when we say, you know, you have said you wouldn't allow me to be tested above what I'm able to bear, I need a way of escape. Do we also add, help me to learn what I need to from this trial? That was something that where God says, if you lack knowledge or if you lack wisdom, ask. And this is after he said you're going through adversities. So I learned to add when I ask, please provide a way of escape. Help me to learn what I need to learn from this particular trial. Give me wisdom. Help me to learn what I need to learn. Now, if God simply provided escape from every trial, where we say, oh, I'm going through a trial, I'm having a hard time at work. God, can you just take me out of this? Can you just remove it? I don't have a hard time at work. Or now I have a sickness. Can you just remove the sickness so I don't have to think about it or I don't have to do anything? It's just gone. If God simply removed or provided a way of escape from every trial, it'd be like a helicopter parent. And you've probably seen those that go around. Oh, don't do that. You're going to get hurt. Oh, you can't go there. You can't do that. Just do nothing so you don't get hurt. And I'm going to protect you so nothing ever happens to you. Not what God says. It's not how we learn from particular things. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 11 says, "My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction." He says, "For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father in the son in whom he delights." Now notice what it says next. "Happy is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding." So he says, I can rejoice in these things, and God is going to correct us, but happy is the man who, when we're corrected, we find wisdom, or we gain understanding, because that is enduring the trial and getting through the trial and bringing it to a close, because we've learned the lesson from it. That's repeated in the New Testament. So the key is finding wisdom, and if we don't have an answer, and many of us have probably been in that situation, provide me the answer that I need to this. Or give me the direction of where I need to walk or where I need to go. But it's repeated in the New Testament in the book of Hebrews, chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 5. It said, "And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives." Now he doesn't say, when you get chastised, when you get corrected, just ask that God to stop correcting you. No, it says, if you endure chastening, if you go through the correction, if you go through a difficult time, God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom the father doesn't chasten? Endure means to stay, to persevere, to finish through. Not say, take me out of it, I don't want to suffer. Verse 8, "But if you are without chastising," or chastening rather, "of which all of you have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons." He said, if you don't have chastening and correction going on in your life, I have to question, am I really a son of God? Because God says, you're going to be corrected. You're going to be chastened. Your character is going to be shapen. Furthermore, just another one of those words. "Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not have much more readily in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us, as it seemed best to them. But he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness." Again, it's focused on the end result. It's focused on something future. And there's a profit. There's something as we get through it, we've gained wisdom, we've gained understanding. Now we know why we've gone through that trial, and we go, thank you that you have brought me to a different perspective, a different understanding, a greater character, that I can be partakers of your holiness. Now it says, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. That's what I was covering earlier. We don't rejoice while the trial's going on. Guess what? I've got another trial. Nevertheless, afterward, when you have gone through the trial, when you've endured, when you've gone to the end of it, and God will guide you to the end, especially if you pray that he will make that way of escape, which means a way that he's going to work through and still allow you to learn the lesson. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Another part of this is learning. Just as he said, if you're suffering trials, ask for wisdom. If you lack wisdom, ask for it, to be trained by it, to learn from the things that we go through, to learn from every trial, affliction, sickness, what is it that I can learn? And even asking God that. The point I'm bringing out today, We rejoice in our trials, not as we're going through them, but once we are through them and we've learned the lessons. And I look back and I think, well, there's certain trials. Yes, it was painful. Yes, it was hard, something to go through. And no, I don't want to have to go through those again. And some people say, if I had to do it all over again, I would do it differently so I wouldn't experience that trial. I appreciate those, because when you do go through those things and you know that God is working with you and you know that it's working together for the good and you learn the lessons from it, you go, I needed that. There is a joy in that, going through that trial, because you've gained from it what God says you should be gaining. You're trained by it. So the way of escape that God gives to each of us is to learn the lesson. Does God want us to, you know, does God want to take the adversity, just simply take it away from us, remove it where there is no adversity? Or is the way of escape a way of helping us and training us so that we can endure the trial that we are facing? It's not deliverance from a trial or difficulty. And it's important that just two words, it's not deliverance from a trial. It is deliverance by going through the trial. And God will make a way of escape, because when you have gone through the trial and you have learned and you have gained from it, he says, then that trial can come to an end. There's not a need for that trial once you have gained and learned and been trained by it. Think about the children of Israel. When they got pushed up against the Red Sea, they had seen miracles of God already. They had seen the plagues take place. They were able to flee. They left. And now they're up against the Red Sea and they see the army, the Egyptians, coming after them. They were in a tight spot. They were in a position where they say, there's no way out. They were facing adversity. That would be a trial. You're looking at the ocean and you're looking back going, here come the Egyptians. What's going to happen to us? They cried out to Moses and to God, and they wanted a way of escape. God gave it to them. Exodus 14 and verse 14 says, the Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. The Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. He said, I'm going to provide a way of escape. They need to move forward. They need to go through. And so it says, keep pushing them. He said, lift up your rod and stretch your hand out over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on the dry land through the midst of the sea. Now, you could have said, well, they prayed for a way of escape. God could have just put another row of fire, put a wall of fire between them, or circled them in a ring of fire and protected the Israelites, let them go a different direction. God said, no, you're facing an adversity, and do you trust me, and is there a faith there? God provided a way of escape, but it was through the Red Sea, not a way of not having to go through it or to go around it, or a way of escaping in a different way. He made them go through it. He didn't take the trying and testing of faith away. He said, I'm testing you. And it says all of those things are written for our examples. He didn't remove the Egyptians. And he didn't just build a wall or something that to defend them and protect them and then just hope the Egyptians go home. He did provide a way of escape, and it was through the sea. It was also a step of faith for them to see the Red Sea and then to see it divide and then go, is that really safe to go through? And they went through on dry ground, and they had to be thinking the whole time, is this going to come back together? Are we going to be caught in this in some way? Because they doubted most of the things that God provided. So he was trying them. He was providing a way of escape. He was providing something that they had to go through, but it was a step of faith and something that they had to endure. They had to face their fear. And he says, push them forward, allow them to go through it, and trust God. And in most cases, when we're going through an affliction or we're going through a trial or difficulty, that's one of the hardest things for people to do. Just trust God that he's going to work it out for you and guide you through it. It removes a lot of the anxiety, removes fear, removes those things, because I know God's going to do this. As Paul said in Romans 8:28, We know that all things will work together for good if we're doing our part. But we have to endure it. We have to learn from it. We have to be changing. So when you have gone through trials and difficulties and you faced afflictions or adversities, what are you to learn from it? What is it that you're supposed to gain? Are you changing? Or did you change because of the as a result of the trial? Has the trial made you better, or has the trial just made you bitter? Sometimes people get bitter. I'm going through trials and adversities. I don't think this is right. I shouldn't have to go through this. Did you simply endure it or put up with it, but not learn from it? When God says, I will provide a way to endure it, he didn't mean that you just put up with it until it stops, but to learn from it, to gain wisdom. And that's why he adds, if you still lack wisdom, ask of God. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 6. 1 Peter chapter 1 and in verse 6. He says, in this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, and if need be, you have been grieved with various trials. For many of you listening, this may be 2020. Maybe you in 2020, you have been grieved with various trials. If not, maybe this was preparing you for 2021. I hope not, but we know that things are going to become more and more difficult as time goes on. Verse 7, it says, he said, you have been grieved with many trials, that the genuineness of your faith, not that you didn't have any faith, but he says the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it's tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. What are trials doing to your faith? Will our faith be found to praise, honor, and glory at the return of Jesus Christ? It says in verse 8, whom having not seen you love, and though now you do not see him, yet believing you rejoice with an inexpressible, or rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith. Sometimes we go through trials and adversities, and like the Apostle Paul, he asked that that pain in the side or whatever was afflicting him would be removed. The thorn in the flesh. God said, no, you're going to have to endure this. So here he's saying the end of your faith is the salvation of your souls. Paul realized this isn't going to keep me from doing what I'm doing. This affliction that I'm going through isn't going to keep me from growing in faith and knowledge. It's humbling me. And so there's something I can gain from it. And he says, you're going to receive the end of your faith, the salvation of your souls. I want to read another Bible verse blog. This one was from a couple of weeks ago. It is Psalm 34 and verse 19. Psalm 34 and verse 19. It says, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. This is written in the Old Testament. This is a psalm that was written that says, God will deliver you from them all. Just as Paul said that everything we go through, all that you go through is going to work together for good. This says, many are the afflictions of the righteous. The righteous are going to have afflictions and trials and difficulties, but the Lord will deliver him out of them all. The Bible verse blog goes on, the Bible reveals God's people are currently living in a world under the sway of Satan, the wicked one, and that this is a temporary life of which is a training ground for a wonderful eternity in God's family. In order to become like our Father, we must resist the devil and endure trials and tribulations, meaning you have to go through them, and God will be there for you. He will guide you through them. He will provide a way to the end of them as we learn and grow. It is a training ground. Thankfully, God has our back, and he will deliver us from these afflictions. We must ask for that deliverance, and we must learn the lessons and develop patience that our trials can bring. you can't just be delivered out of every trial. What would you learn? But we can go through every trial, and God can give you the support, the strength, the help that you need to go through a particular trial and to gain from it. And if we're lacking in the understanding of what is it I should I gain, if you lack that wisdom, God says, ask. It's not about getting out of trials so that we don't have them. What is the end result? What is it that we're going to eventually come out of and rejoice? I learned something from that trial. Now the trial's over. What is the end of your faith? In all things, in all of the trials and adversities, the difficulties, the afflictions, the illnesses that we have to go through, as Paul said, we know, and we need to know, God will provide a way of escape.